At the Kennedy Space Center, they are on track towards launching the Space Shuttle Discovery. This will be mission STS-133. STS stands for Space Transportation System, and 133 is the sequential number of shuttle missions. And this will be launched on Friday the 25th, Melbourne time, at 6:50 a.m. So 6:50 a.m, just before 7 o'clock in the morning, here on Friday. At the Kennedy Space Center, it will still be February the 24th, Thursday, and it'll be 4:50 in the afternoon there. So a late afternoon launch at the Kennedy Space Center. Weather Officer Kathy Winters tells us that there's a 30% chance of bad weather affecting the launch, particularly at some of the abort landing sites. You see, they have to have good weather both at the launch site, but also in case the shuttle has to come back. The landing site at Kennedy Space Center has to be good weather. And also across the Atlantic, several of the landing sites there, which could be used in the event of a launch abort, that has to be good weather. And if they go once around the Earth, they have to be able to land back in California. And again, the weather there is looking like it's going to be a bit too windy. So Kathy says there's a 30% chance that the weather will be good in all those places. The following day, it's only a 40% chance if they have to wave off for a day. So we'll just have to hang on there and see what happens on Friday morning. Now, we do have some details about this flight. This is the one that's taking up Robonaut, a robotic humanoid type thing called R2. No, not R2-D2, just R2. And there's a crew of six. Tim Copper, of course, was bumped off the mission because he had a bike accident, and has been replaced by Steve Bowen, who flew on the last space shuttle mission. Now, they had a pre-mission briefing yesterday, and the space show had its plastic pipe in there. And this is Jeff Spaulding, who's NASA's test director, and he's telling us what he's been doing in the last few days and what's going to happen over the next couple of days as well.
Thank you, Kendria. And good morning to everyone, and welcome. I'm very proud to be back here today to provide launch countdown status. It's been a couple of months, obviously, since the last time we did that. As we're preparing to get Discovery ready to fly on the STS-133 mission, this will be Discovery's 39th and final flight, and she is bringing the permanent multipurpose module, the PMM, up to the station along with the Express Logistics Carrier. It's been an interesting and exciting and probably challenging few months for us over the last, since we've been here last. This will be the second longest vertical flow for the vehicle of Discovery. The vertical flow starts when we roll out of the orbiter processing facility. The longest one for us was STS-35, was 183 days, and this one will be 170 if we make our launch date on Thursday the 24th, which we're certainly planning on doing. As you recall, this vertical flow started for us on September the 9th when we did roll out of the processing facility, and we spent some time in the VAB, rolled out on the 20th of September out to the launch pad for the first time. Flow was going very well. We did have a leak, as you recall, on our Ohms pod, and we had to replace one of our flange seals. That was one of the big topics we had before our first launch. We did make the launch attempt on November the 5th, and again, as you all probably recall, we did end up scrubbing for a leak on our hydrogen vent line, and in addition, we found some cracks in on the external tank foam. Those were associated after some further inspection with a stringer, and we went ahead and repaired those at the launch pad, and we targeted a new launch date of November the 30th. At that point, we did have some further discussions about how much evaluations we needed to do with the pad and decided to go ahead and do a tanking test. And we did that test on December the 17th. We added a lot of instrumentation to the tank to support that test to give us some more data so that we understood the nature of the crack and what types of things might have caused that. We also made the decision to roll back to the vehicle assembly building and did so on the 21st of December, right before Christmas, so that we could complete all of the non-destructive evaluations of the tank. Because at the pad, we only have access to a portion of the tank, and by rolling back to the vehicle assembly building, that gave us full access 360 degrees around the tank itself. So those evaluations went well, and we decided, based on the data that we did of those evaluations, to do a radius block mod on the stringers where we had seen some cracks, to beef those up a little bit and give us some more structural integrity. Those mods went extremely well, and we were able to roll back to the pad on January the 31st. And since that time, we've been working diligently to get the vehicle back into launch configuration, changing out some of those time-based consumables like batteries and some provisions and other things. Additionally, we had to replace mission specialist Tim Kopra with Steve Bowen on this mission. And Steve Bowen will be performing all the duties that Mr. Kopra would have been doing. And as a result of that, we also changed out the spacesuit since he's going to be doing our spacewalks as well. So that got us to where we are today. Last night, we did complete our flight pressurization of our on-orbit control system tanks as well as our main propulsion system tanks, and that operation went very well, just as planned. I got the pad back open about 5:45 this morning. Since that time, we've been working deconfiguring from that up and also getting ready to perform our launch countdown preparations. And all of that will continue throughout the day as we get into call to stations this afternoon at 2:30 for the launch countdown. And then our countdown clock will begin counting at 3 o'clock from T-minus 43 hours. At that point, we'll get right into our final checkout and configuration of our onboard avionics systems. And then we'll work preparations for fuel cell reactants later tonight. At 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, we will clear the pad for the loading of those reactant operations and continue those preps until the actual loading, which starts at 12:30 in the afternoon. We expect the pad to open up about 6 tomorrow evening from that app, and then we'll continue with about 120 pounds of liquid oxygen that we continue to offload of the vehicle to get us to our appropriate flight load and flight mass for that system, which is about 4 more hours of work to do there. We will proceed with our checkout of our orbiter and ground communication systems and all of the networks associated with those on Wednesday afternoon at about 2:30, followed then by our final flight crew equipment stowage operations at about 4. On Wednesday evening, the rotating service structure will be pulled back away from the vehicle and the xenon lights will be turned on, revealing the vehicle in its launch form for the last time. And that'll be about 8 o'clock on Wednesday evening when we do that. Then as we go just past midnight, about 12:30 or so, our countdown clock will resume from T-minus 11 hours, and then at that point we'll begin our final loading preparations and begin clearing the pad about 2 a.m. on Thursday morning. Our earliest tanking time is at 7:25 Thursday morning. It takes about 3 hours as normal, and then we'll bring the flight crew out once we get the crew module configured at about 1:30 on Thursday afternoon. Our launch window is about 10 minutes or so in length, opens at 4:45 on Thursday the 24th. We will target the middle of that window, which correlates to about 4:50 p.m. On Friday, February the 25th, and then every day thereafter, we do have some flight day 4 rendezvous capability from a launch window perspective, which means that'll give us about 3 extra minutes or so on that 10-minute launch window for those days beginning on Friday the 25th. Now, we do have launch opportunities up through and including March the 6th before we run into some station constraints on our dual docked operations because we have quite a few vehicles up there and things will be moving around, the Soyuz and the HTVs, et cetera. Before we get upon that, though, we do have some range constraints that are out there. There's an Atlas V on the range on March the 4th and a Delta IV on the range on March the 11th. So what that says is right now we have, from a planning perspective, we'll have the February 24th through the 26th with no issues at all. Once we get to the 27th, we actually come up against the Delta, even though that's later, that constraint first, because that will be our landing dates will start to impinge on the preparations needed to prepare that Delta for launch. And then if we end up going out a day or more beyond that, then we would start potentially overlapping right on top of their launch date with landing. So that constraint is out there, as well as the ones for the Atlas on the 4th. So we'll be evaluating those, but right now the 24th through the 26th are very clear for us. We do have 3 in a row capability available. If needed, we do the evaluations that we normally do for that. And we don't have any beta angle concerns at all the way through February or March. Our pad hold time is 8 days for liquid hydrogen, 9 for liquid oxygen, so we got plenty of time there. With that 120-pound offload, though, we do eliminate our 48-hour turn capability if we have to do a top-off, meaning if we do any top-off ops, it'll take at least 72 hours to perform that. It's an 11-day mission with 1 contingency day, 2 weather days planned. End of mission landing is at KSC a little before 1 o'clock on Monday, March the 7th, and then the 8th would be the plus 1 day, and that's around 11:30 or so in the morning on that day. There is ATV-2 docking, if you recall, that did launch a few days back. That docking is planned for about 5 hours prior to our launch, so it's pretty close to the time frame in which we're getting ready to get off the ground. And we'll be watching that closely. And if there are any issues with that docking, then the program would go off and assess any issues or impacts to launch at that time. And if needed, we could hold at any point in the countdown from that point forward. So we'll be ready and prepared for any of those things if needed. So in summary, Discovery has been a really remarkable vehicle for us and for the program. She still has a few more miles to go before she sleeps, though, She's taken us on many amazing journeys throughout the years, and we expect this flight to be no different than any of those. Thanks.
And we did play that feature on last week's show about the life of the Space Shuttle Discovery. And that launch, as we said, is going to be happening on Friday morning, just before 7 o'clock, if all goes well. Now, it's almost a year since I was at the Kennedy Space Center to watch the launch of STS-131. And then the launch after that, which is the, you know, the launch before this one that's now going up, was way back in May of last year. And that was called STS-132, and it featured the Space Shuttle Atlantis. The space show had its very own reporter, Peter Arwood, at the Kennedy Space Center. And in this recording, he describes the view from the press site as they were making preparations to launch STS-132.
This is Peter Aylward at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. It's now Thursday, May the 13th, and it's 7:30 a.m. I'm standing in the car park at the media site, looking at the vehicle assembly building. Atlantis is out on the launch pad, getting ready for its flight, which is due to commence at 2:20 p.m. local time here tomorrow. The rotating service structure and the vehicle is surrounded currently, and that will be rotated back towards the afternoon today, about 5 p.m. Everything seems to be tracking well for Atlantis. All of the preparations have gone very, very smoothly, and the crew is here in Florida at the Kennedy Space Center. They spent yesterday and will probably again today spend time practicing their landing at the Kennedy Space Center runway in a Gulfstream, which is a modified aircraft which is used to simulate the approach and landing of a space shuttle. Well, the rest of the crew will no doubt be going through various last-minute procedures, weather briefings, and emergency procedures, etc. They'll receive any updates on the situation on the ISS, which is going well. There was a relocation of a Soyuz last night, or the day before yesterday, and that went successfully, so that clears the way for the RAVSAT payload, which is being brought up by Atlantis as part of its complement of cargo, and that will be brought up and moved to dock with the ISS after Atlantis has docked, and remain permanently there as a science facility on the vehicle. So it's L-1. There's a press conference this morning, the L-1 press conference, which will be the last scheduled media conference before the launch tomorrow, and later on this afternoon I will probably go out with the various press photographers and help them to set up their remote cameras, which is right beside the launch pad. Quite a unique experience. Anyway, this is Peter Aylward, live at the Kennedy Space Center.
So Peter was there, and he did go out with the camera emplacements and set them up. And then the lucky dog, next day, there was a call for a certain Andrew Rennie went out. And Peter said, "Oh, I know that guy." And they said, "Well, where's Andrew?" "Oh, he's in Australia." "Oh, okay, well, you'll do instead." And they took him up to the top of the roof of the vehicle assembly building, that huge building. It used to be the biggest building in the world, not the tallest, but the biggest in volume. And they took him up the roof of this huge building, which is over 120 metres high. And he got this excellent recording of the launch of that Atlantis, STS-132. And here's Peter's recording. This is Peter's recording from the top of the vehicle assembly building of the launch of STS-132 in May last year.
Go, baby.
And there it goes off into the distance, the Space Shuttle Atlantis, on what was to have been its final mission. But it looks like they're going to do another one, so maybe it's not the final mission for it. Now, they are, however, running out the program. Officially, there's two more space shuttles, but there might be a third one. And I spoke, when I was over there, with Pete Nikolenko, who was the STS-131 launch director at the Kennedy Space Center, and I asked him about family and public involvement in the final space shuttle mission, and here's how my conversation went.
I don't know if that's going to make sure it's running. As the program runs out, I notice you're taking efforts to bring families in and so on like that. Do you expect to continue doing that?
We hope to in some form or fashion, and we're trying to evaluate what kind of options may be available, and certainly at or after the last mission, we are considering even something such as an open house for the Kennedy Space Center to either bring not only members of the employees and their families, perhaps, but also perhaps even the public in to celebrate the last mission or the completion of the last mission.
And how do your workers feel as the program comes to its end?
Well, I think it's somewhat bittersweet in that we realized that we've known that the program was going to be ending at some time, and now that we're approaching that end, we want to finish strong. So we know that we want to make sure that the last mission is completed as safely and successfully as the first one, and there is a certain element of pride. Many members of our team are very proud because we've spent our careers working on the space shuttle program, and so we have a lot of passion for working that, and we plan to continue that until the very last mission and through wheel stop of the very last mission.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Andy.
Good, thank you.
And I was talking there with Pete Nikolenko, the launch director for the space shuttle at the Kennedy Space Center, that was last April. And as you know, the program should have been over by now. Now, if you want to see some details of my experiences in Florida, then go to the Southern FM website, go to the Space Show, and there you'll find a Florida diary and lots of pictures of the space shuttle, both the one that Peter saw being prepared for launch and the one he saw being launched. I saw it being prepared, and also the one that I saw take off and land. You are listening to the Space Show on 88.3 Southern FM.